I'm David Jernigan. I'm an associate professor at the Johns Hopkins Bloomberg School of Public Health and the director of the Center on Alcohol Marketing and Youth. And today I am, in something under 20 minutes, going to talk to you about four different research projects that were all combined into one big project called SHECAP, the Social and Health Effects of Changes in Alcohol Prices. I will warn you, for those of you who are methods fiends, as I was preparing the presentation, I was jettisoning method slides right and left to fit four projects into a single session, but I can certainly refer you or to where the methods are discussed in much greater detail. So this is all about taxes. The Community Preventive Services Task Force, which is the non-governmental voluntary body that makes recommendations about public health, the effectiveness of public health strategies for the Centers for Disease Control. They recommend increasing the unit of price of alcohol by raising taxes based on strong evidence of effectiveness for reducing excessive alcohol consumption and related harms, and public health effects are expected to be proportional to the size of the tax increase. This is one of those areas where there's an enormous amount of evidence about the effectiveness of taxes in reducing consumption and related harms. So the question we asked ourselves in this collaborative was, given that large body of evidence, what research questions, if answered, would help in translation of that large body of evidence into public health practice? And I'm speaking now, I am the mouthpiece for a lot of people, some of whom are in the room. There were four universities involved with this collaborative, a team at the University of Florida headed by Alex Wagenaar, a team at the University of Illinois Chicago headed by Frank Chalupka, a team at Boston Medical Center headed by Tim Namey, and a team at Hopkins headed by me. It was funded by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention under a contract, we are responsible for everything in this talk, and we do not necessarily represent the views of the CDC, and none of us have any financial interests to disclose. So what were those research questions that we thought would be so useful to answer? Just to continue to document the public health impact of alcohol tax increases, but especially in areas that have not been well investigated. And one of the neat things about this project is that we've produced more data and some surprising data on the influence of alcohol tax increases on sexually transmitted diseases. And I'll share some of that with you. And then, what is the impact of alcohol tax increases on poor and working class consumers? It's a common argument that these taxes are regressive. As Frank Chalupka, one of the members of the collaborative, puts it, the taxes may be somewhat regressive, but the public health effects of the taxes are progressive, in that poor people, lower-income people will benefit more from generally the public health impact of the taxes. But nonetheless, who's paying for these taxes, basically, was the research question that we sought to explore. And then another common argument is these taxes kill jobs. And so we decided to take that on head on. What is the actual impact of alcohol taxes on employment on a state-by-state basis? Given that it's so difficult to translate this into practice, what can we learn from recent efforts to translate this this body of research into public health practice at the ground level? So those are the four questions. And how is this day? No, that's not those four questions. I will answer them in turn, sort of. So first, the impact. So sexually transmitted diseases, they're big. About 20 million new infections in the U.S. every year. 50% of these occur among 15 to 24-year-olds. The most common treatable sexually transmitted diseases are chlamydia and gonorrhea. And one advantage of the STDs is they are generally reported monthly, and they're reported rapidly. So they're one of the earlier forms of data that we can get a hold of in order to evaluate the impact of an intervention like an alcohol tax increase. They also have some interesting disparities. They are 2 to 22 times more likely to occur among people of African heritage and 2 times more likely to occur among Hispanic or Latino populations. So a related research question that we asked was, will the impact of the tax differ among different racial and ethnic groups? So this was the Wagenaar group at the University of Florida, and the one I'm going to report on now is Illinois. And Illinois, on September 1st, 2009, implemented a very large alcohol tax increase. The beer one's slightly modest, but the wine and spirits were almost doubling the tax. It had absolutely nothing to do with public health. The governor and the legislature wanted money to upgrade the roads and bridges. So these are the tax increases. We're also very cautious about how we do this work, and so the tax code was reviewed by an attorney trained in alcohol taxes to make sure that we were getting the rates correctly. The methods, I'd say very little about them except that the design was counterfactual. Comparing what happened in Illinois with states without alcohol tax changes, starting with 48 possible comparison states as the contiguous U.S. states, and then dropping out what were at that time 18 monopoly states, the state of interest, the 15 states that did have tax changes during the study period, the 2 states that bordered Illinois because of possible leakage across the border. So it ended up with 12 states forming the counterfactual group. And I'm going to go right to the results here because of the time. They are truly striking. This study has been published in Addiction this year. You can see, yes, there are disparities. This is the white and black compared to each other. And particularly striking, I think, is that 32% drop for African Americans ages 20 to 24, 50% drop for African Americans ages 25 to 29. That's gonorrhea. Similarly, large differences, slightly smaller drops, but large differences for chlamydia. I've sent this to friends of mine in the HIV community. They didn't believe it. And so we've had some interesting discussions with them, follow-up, et cetera. Alex Wagenaar and his group have done lots of this kind of research. I'm quite confident of their methods. Some very striking findings. It adds to the well-established evidence that taxes reduce drinking and that they reduce alcohol-related disease and traffic crashes. And it also points up to these as being likely to be an effective strategy for preventing STDs, including possibly HIV, especially among blacks or other groups with modest incomes and higher than average disease or infection rates. Now, the same research team has also evaluated the impact of the tax on motor vehicle crashes in Illinois with actually similarly striking findings. That's just been sent out for review. So has their evaluation of the impact of Maryland's recent tax increase on sexually transmitted diseases in Maryland, again with significant findings. Moving right along. Next, I'm going to talk about the findings of 2 other research groups, and I'm going to talk about them sequentially in terms of methods, but then sort of together in terms of findings. So the next 2 questions, who pays for alcohol taxes and what's the impact of the taxes on jobs? So who pays? And in both of these, I should say, we modeled 4 different tax increase scenarios. $0.05 a drink, $0.10 a drink, and $0.25 a drink increase, and a 5%. So those are excise tax increases and a 5% sales tax increase, ad valorem tax. We assumed a pass-through of the tax of 1. That's a very conservative assumption, since a number of studies have found that actually the taxes, particularly the excise taxes, get passed through at a rate more than 1, but again, conservative assumption. And we used, in order to estimate how much consumption would be affected by the taxes, there are a range of different estimates of price elasticities out there for alcoholic beverages. We used the ones from the Community Guide Review and then weighted them to account for beverage-specific consumption in each state. And for this particular one, for the Hupay's analysis, the team used a weighted price per drink by beverage type obtained by Impact Data Bank, which is a market research firm serving the alcohol industry. In this analysis of who pays, excessive drinkers were defined as those reporting binge drinking or heavy drinking in the last 30 days, or underage drinkers. Since this was built using the data from the behavioral risk factor surveillance system, the underage group is only the 18 to 20-year-olds because BRFSS starts at 18. So we probably underestimated the number of excessive drinkers, but nonetheless, that's the data we were working from. We assessed household income at four different levels and assessed employment as employed for wages or non-employed. Okay, then for the jobs analysis, again, this is in response to the arguments that that this is a job killer. The industry generally argues in these debates, as they did. I was involved in the campaign in Maryland to raise the tax there. They argue that employment in farming, manufacturing, distribution, and related sectors. So sort of basic level farming, employment in terms of alcohol production is effective, and then they use some fairly substantial multiplier effects to argue the income earned from related industries such as hospitality will also be affected, and that states will lose significant tax revenues as a result of a drop in corporate sales tax, income tax, etc., because these jobs have been removed. So the argument is then that higher taxes on alcohol that reduce consumption will cause economic losses, including job losses. This has been a very convincing argument over and over in state after state. And it's very similar to what has been argued against tobacco tax increases. Those arguments have been effectively refuted by research evidence showing that the net job impact of reductions in tobacco use from higher taxes actually don't have these kinds of effects. Michigan overall employment rose as tobacco consumption fell. Another study looking at eight non-tobacco producing regions, again, employer rose as tobacco consumption fell. And part of the reason that the argument does not hold up is because there are two different ways of looking at the impact here. One is the what we call the gross impact, which is just the impact on the alcohol production and related sector. Okay, so you decrease consumption of alcoholic beverages through a tax increase, and you'll have fewer jobs in alcohol-dependent or related sectors. However, the money that's raised by the tax, as well as the money that people don't spend on alcohol, doesn't just magically disappear from the economy. It goes somewhere else. And the money not spent on alcoholic beverages can actually, at least in theory, lead to gains in jobs in other sectors. If it goes to the government, then it can also lead to gains in jobs in other sectors. What we used to model this was something called the REMI model. This is a gigantic macroeconomic model of the U.S. economy. The original presentation had three slides just on the REMI model. I'm sparing you. But it has been used extensively by states and local governments and other agencies to examine the impact, employment and or further economic impact of things like a new tax credit program in Michigan, the impact of 9/11 on the New York City region, as well as reductions in tobacco use from higher tobacco taxes and other tobacco control measures, and so on. It is a very standard, well-recognized macroeconomic model of the U.S. economy. So for this piece of modeling, again, The same for alternative tax scenarios were modeled. Again, the assumption was that the tax increases would be fully passed on to consumers. We assumed that alcoholic beverages prices net of tax, that is, without the tax, were going to stay constant within and across states. And we looked at two different scenarios for how the tax revenues could be spent. The first, just if it went into the general fund, and the second, if it were devoted specifically to the healthcare sector. And healthcare sector was defined fairly narrowly: hospitals, medical care, et cetera. And in this modeling exercise, in the first one, we looked at all 50 state data, but in this one, we modeled five states chosen for geographic diversity and lots of other reasons, too. I'm going to move more quickly. Looked at the impact on the beverage industry, the impact on other sectors, the impact on government revenue, and we did model the industry only, the gross effect, as well as the net effect. So here are the results. Get out your computers. I had hoped to be able to show you the tool, but these machines are disabled from internet access. Fortunately, I have some flat files. So if you go to this site, you see a homepage for this particular tool, and you choose a state, you choose a scenario. Here we chose Louisiana and a 25-cent per drink tax increase, and you press Get Results. And the first thing you see is the distribution of consumption of alcohol in that particular state. This is a really important driver of who pays. In a lot of states like Louisiana, people pay nothing for an additional tax increase because half the population doesn't drink. You also see that little sign that says PDF download. This will download all of the results for both tools into one single PDF. All right, then looking at who pays. Over and over again, excessive drinkers pay far more for these taxes than non-excessive drinkers. They are much more targeted interventions than people usually assume. Looking across income groups, again, among the non-excessive drinkers, they're actually slightly progressive, not purely regressive. And then among the excessive drinkers, it bounces around. Some of them are concave, some of them are U-shaped, et cetera. Looking by employment status, again, most of the time we find this among the non-excessive drinkers that the employed are paying slightly more than the unemployed, and it bounces around a bit with the excessive drinkers. And then the jobs impact. And so this is quarter of a drink here in Louisiana, and we estimate that if that money were put into the general fund, it would create a net of the jobs lost in the alcohol industry and related sectors, it would create about 3,700 jobs and change. If it were put into the healthcare sector, it would create about 1,800 jobs. Again, this has been modeled for all 50 states, tools available online. All right, the fourth thing, the translation of these into taxes, and here I'm going to go, into public health practice, here I'm going to go very quickly and smile a lot at Rebecca Ramirez, who did a lot of this work. Basically, three different states had recently attempted tax increases when we were starting the project. We looked at those three states, the big increase in Illinois, an increase in Massachusetts in the sales tax, adding alcohol to the state's 6% sales tax, which was then repealed. So we got to look at two different tax changes in that state, and then Maryland, where in July of 2011 the state added a 3% alcohol-specific sales tax. The methodology, archival research, background materials, key informant interviews, this is a really, really quick summary of the findings. The more pluses, the more these were present, and you know, I was involved with Maryland. I'm a bit biased, but you can see a lot of pluses in the Maryland column. Interesting in Maryland, no key politician support at the outset. In Illinois and Massachusetts, there were key politicians who were champions for this, and that is sometimes how these happen. In Illinois, the governor got it into his head to do this. In Massachusetts, it was legislators. But the importance of grassroots organizing, of past experience, and of building large coalitions were really really came out in these case studies. Some of the campaigns are large public debates, while others happen quietly and largely behind the scenes. Public health research may be necessary, but it is not sufficient, which is, it really came through clearly. And for policymakers, these campaigns are really all about the revenue. The public health research comes up, but the revenue issues are much more the topic of the policy and the public conversation. So in summary, we find that alcohol tax increases have the intended impact in terms of reducing use and consequences, do not harm disproportionately poor and working class non-excessive drinkers, do not lead to massive job losses, in fact lead to slight increase in jobs no matter the scenario, and generate lessons that may be learned. Thank you very much. Talk to you into submission.
And your website is live now.
The website is live. The tool is live. cami.org/action/taxes/tax tool. Yes?
What was the biggest surprise in your research? Did you anticipate the outcomes, or was there a big surprise?
Well, I'm going to reframe the question a little bit. I think the biggest relief was being able to say, first of all, the impact of the excessive drinkers and the degree to which this research shows some much more targeted intervention than people often think. That the common thing is this will penalize moderate drinkers. Moderate drinkers end up paying very little. In addition, most of it is paid by exactly the group that you would want to be paying more and reducing their drinking. And then the jobs data, I guess it was a big surprise that the general fund has much bigger impact on jobs than the healthcare sector, but I think it's partly because of how narrowly we define the healthcare sector. Yeah? Yes, it is far afield. The question is, what do I think of the sugar tax to curb obesity? I think there are all sorts of things we can do in public health that can make the population healthier. And there's good, solid research that it will make the population healthier. And we're always in a dance with the population itself about what they will support. One of the lessons for me from tobacco for alcohol taxes is far fewer people smoke than drink. The more people use a product, my guess is the harder it is to pass a tax on that product. And I think that's part of what we run into with a soda tax.